Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome back to episode 139 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I am Sean Penrod, your host, and I cannot wait to dive into today's interview with you. Welcome. If you are a new listener to the show, thank you so much for joining me. Every Tuesday and Friday, twice a week, you will get a fantastic interview with one of Magic the Gathering's greatest players. Either the top 8 of a Grand Prix, top 16 of a Pro Tour, or a community icon who we can just learn a lot from, hear their story, and see what they are offering the community. If you've been with me for a while, thank you so much. It means a lot to me that you keep tuning in and listening. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to growing and continuing this wonderful journey with you. Before we dive into today's guest, I do want to say thank you to the patrons who support the show directly. mtgprotutor.com/Patreon is where you can go to support the show directly. You can pledge any amount you want per episode. It may not feel like a lot on your end, but it really makes a difference on my end. Those $1 and $2 really add up and help me do things like hire out the editing and the show notes and offload those things that I'm not good at so I can focus on the things that I am good at, which is bringing you great content twice a week to take your game to the next level. So thank you so much for all the direct support. It really means a lot to me. I had a blast sending out a Kaladesh Fat Pack to one of our patrons as a thank you for supporting the show. I do that each and every month, so if you're interested in jumping in on that, mtgpro2.com/Patreon is where you can go to figure out more. If you haven't already, you can download my 5-point deck building resource guide, which are resources that were recommended from pros that were guests right here on this very show. So these are places that you may not have heard of, or if you have heard of them, you might not have used, that are available to us Magic players that guests recommended, places that they think are valuable that will help you build better decks. So that's mtgpro2.com/free resource. Maybe some of you stumbled onto the show after getting this free resource, and if so, again, welcome. Welcome to the show. Give it a listen. Stick around. Go back into the archives. Look for players whom you look up to and respect and hear their origin stories. And if you're a regular listener and haven't gotten that guide yet, again, mtgpro2.com/free resource is where you can go for that. As I put together more guides for you, trying to compile all this knowledge and information that the pros have shared with us, I will definitely be posting it and letting you guys know where to find it. So, last weekend we had Grand Prix Atlanta and Grand Prix London. Those were both really cool, but this weekend is the Pro Tour. It's a Pro Tour right after a brand new set has been released. We are looking at Pro Tour Kaladesh in Honolulu, Hawaii. I cannot wait to see what the pros come out with. I cannot wait to see the technology that they use to build better standard decks. I really love standard. I haven't been able to dive into it yet, and that's partially because I've been waiting to see what happens at the Pro Tour. I don't want to go investing in a big strategy if it's just going to shift and be debunked after this weekend. So I understand that you run the risk of, you know, price hikes, but that's part of the price we pay for waiting for the Pro Tour. And whether you get into standard or not, it is so fun to see what the pros are doing, how they think, how they play, and it's just a great time to tune into Magic and level up your game. So Pro Tour Kaladesh this weekend, here we come. Well, that's it for the top of the interview stuff. Thank you so much, and as I said, I can't wait to share our guest's journey with you. So without further ado, let's bring him in, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a Pro Tour old-timer who started when he was 15 years old. He has 4 Pro Tour Top 8s, about 8 Grand Prix Top 8s, and has won 2 Masters. He's a member of the Hall of Fame, class of 2010, and got where he is now by winning and losing a bunch of matches. Coming to us from Las Vegas, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Ben Rubin. Ben, how you doing today?
Hi, Sean. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Excellent. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
I hope so.
Sweet. Now, all you prodigies out there, we're ready to dive into Ben's story. He is not on Twitter, so you won't be able to find him there. But you know, if you get a chance to meet him and talk to him, pick his brain because he knows a lot about Magic. And so, Ben, we want to use stories to bridge the gap between where we are and where you are, because you're off there doing great things in Magic. Obviously, at Hall of Famer, that doesn't happen, you know, from not trying. And so we really want to learn about you and your story. But before we dive into that, tell us, what do you have going on outside of Magic? Do you work? Are you a student? What do you have going on?
I do data analysis, and I'm studying the Alexander technique.
What is that?
The Alexander technique is a mind-body training method to live healthier and happier. I also do some Zen meditation, watch a lot of movies,
Is that Alexander's in like Alexander the Great or some Alexander that we know, or is it some modern Alexander that came up with this?
You know, when I first heard the name of it, I thought it was Alexander the Great too, but nope. It's just a guy from Australia who lived about 100 years ago, whose last name happened to be Alexander.
There we go. Excellent. Excellent. So that's great that you're able to, you know, have that kind of lifestyle where you're studying things that are interesting to you and that you can really be passionate about and get into. And so another story we want to hear is how you first got into magic. We love hearing the origin stories of our guests. So take us to the time that you very first saw or played with magic cards. What was that like?
Well, I'm flattered that you think I can remember that far back. Let's see. I'm 33 right now, and I think I was almost 12 when I learned to play. It was sort of a fad in middle school. I was in sixth grade, and I had decided to kind of sit this one out. I thought it was going to be just too much spending my allowance and that kind of thing. I had enough with baseball cards and Marvel cards and coins and all that kind of thing. But eventually, somebody taught me how to play, and I was using their deck, and yeah, I just got hooked really, really fast.
Nice. Is that a friend from school?
Yeah, a friend from school. And, you know, before I knew it, I was playing every lunch hour, and then I was writing decks during class. And sometimes I would write notes to the person next to me about trades I wanted them to make with me. And I brought a deck with me to the middle school dance. Nice. Yeah, it was just pretty much addiction right away.
And what was that first set that you came in on?
Revised was out. Wow. And I think Fallen Empires came out right around the time I started.
Now, have you been playing Solid since then, or do you have a break like most players?
No, there are definitely some periods of sets that I do not know. I hardly played at all from 2010 to 2014, and I hardly played maybe like 2000, there's another break in there, like 2004 to 2006, something like that.
So of the sets that you have played, what has been your favorite one?
What's my favorite magic set? Good question. You know, my favorite magic set is not something that I spend much time thinking about. In fact, I've never thought about it. I really liked Mirrodin Block Limited.
Okay.
I liked the last limited format a lot. As far as constructed formats, yeah, I've liked a lot of formats, but none really come to mind. I don't really have a favorite set, I have to say.
That's cool that you have a limited one that stands out. Why was Mirrodin Block Limited? Why did that stand out?
I really enjoyed learning how to draft the Affinity archetype.
Okay.
And it was really neat. There are so many different ways to go. You could try to get your stuff to be really cheap and really prioritize artifact land and cheap artifacts. You could go for the lashers, like creatures that got bigger with a lot of artifacts in play. You could go with equipment, which were also artifacts. You could try to splash colors. And it was just one of the first times where I felt like in limited, I was not just trying to draft removal, a good mana curve, and like powerful rares.
Right.
I felt like I was really crafting a deck while I was drafting in interesting ways. That's a very satisfying feeling.
So along the same lines, what's one of your favorite cards?
Oh, one of my favorite cards. I like Traverse the Ulvenwald.
Nice. A recent one. Yeah. So for those of us who don't know, what is that card? What does it do? And why do you like it?
Traverse the Ulvenwald is a rare from whatever, a couple sets ago. I don't remember the names of sets. It is one green, and when you do not have Delirium, it just lets you search your library for a basic land. But if you do have Delirium, you can search your library for any land or any creature. So you have this card that's kind of a weak mana fixer in the early game, and you have to decide whether to use it early or save it late. Then there are times sort of in the middle of the game where you've just gotten Delirium and you're not quite sure what to get. Do you get your big finisher like an Emrakul or an Ulamog, or do you get an Ishkanah, Grass Spider? Maybe you just get another land. It just leads to interesting games where you're sort of crafting a long-term plan.
Right.
And you can do more than just cast the cards that you've drawn.
Yeah. So cool. The cards that give you options, gives you versatility. Yeah, they're just such heavy hitters, such utility cards that it's nice to have them around for sure. So, Ben, you've been playing, what, 21 years from 12 to 33? You know, a couple stints here and there where you didn't. Why? Like, what makes magic fun for you? Like, why do you stay around?
Well, I have to admit, first of all, that sometimes I play magic when it's not, or I have played magic when it wasn't fun. Okay. And it was just kind of what I was doing. But I have made like a concerted effort in the last, say, 10 years to really only play when I was enjoying it. And it puts you in touch with a lot of smart people. I know people from medical fields or graduate programs and stuff, and they say the magic community are the smartest people they've hung out with. It's also just a really nice common thing that other people are thinking about, a common history. And, hey, you know, as much as we get mana screwed, it's a fun game.
Very true. I mean, at its core, it's a game, for sure. So I want to dive into that comment you just said about you have played when it wasn't fun. So I'm trying to figure out, when it comes to fun with magic, is it solely on the set and the cards are in and of themselves what bring us enjoyment and fun? And if it's bad, we're not having fun. If they're good, we are having fun. Or have you been in periods of your life where it was more of you that wasn't having fun regardless of what was going on within magic?
I'll take that a little bit indirectly. For one, as kind of a pro player, and I think pro player is a little bit misleading. I mean, very few people are actually professional magic players. I'm one of 100 or 200 people who play as part of their income.
Right.
Now you're talking about maybe four or five big weekends a year and then some Grand Prix and stuff like that. So, you know, we're pro in the sense that we take it as a serious undertaking. You know, it is a game, but it's also, you know, something to stay up late if you need to, or travel for, or to seriously prioritize.
Right.
So with that mindset, you get a certain kind of freedom, actually, which is that no matter how much you might dislike the set from your own perspective or from whatever taste it leaves in your mouth, you still have kind of an obligation to yourself to try to win and succeed and help your teammates. So in that way, that just that alone is fun. Trying to figure out how can I best win is a really interesting process, even if you're playing a game that's really not that much fun, like poker, in my opinion.
Got it.
It can still be interesting. So it's never been the case that there was a magic set that I hated so much that I couldn't enjoy it.
Okay.
There have been magic sets that I didn't understand, such that it was a little frustrating. But no matter how much I dislike the set, I'm still gonna have a good chance to enjoy it.
Right, because the process, like you said, of figuring out how to make the best of that situation, of how to use the resources, the cards that were given to you so that you can win, that process is kind of where you find some of the enjoyment, where you get some fun.
Exactly. Some of the satisfaction, camaraderie cool. with my teammates.
Right.
Do I ever bring things to magic that sabotage me, that keep me from enjoying it? Absolutely. Absolutely. I think a lot of the time, and I've seen this in other people too, where people want to win too much. And what I mean by that is they want to win this game. This game is really what they've pinned their hopes to, and they're not looking past it. I've always found that a little bit unfortunate, because most every Magic player knows he's going to play lots of games after this one. So sitting and praying that your opponent won't draw the burn spell or whatever to kill you is just ridiculously short-sighted. You have to learn, or at least be open to the idea of taking losses, you know, in stride. No one likes losing, and especially when we lose and we start to doubt ourselves. But you know, accepting losing is just a big part of enjoying Magic.
I think that long-term perspective is very key. And I just got keyed into that recently because, like you said, a lot of times, because I've been kind of stuck in this too, where it's like, hey, if I'm traveling to a Grand Prix, for example, for me, that's a big deal. And so I was like, oh, like I got to do well in this match to make day two or whatever. When if you're able to take a step back and have a big picture and say, this isn't, and I think that might be a little easier the more you play and the more experience you get. And when you go to more events and you're able to say, hey, this isn't the end-all be-all. This isn't the last match of Magic I'm ever going to play. This isn't my last chance to make Day 2 or Top 8 or go to the Pro Tour or whatever. And so when you have that bigger perspective, I think you're able to take that attitude of not needing to win this one match right here, right now, and you're able to kind of take the ups and the downs in better stride. And then, like I said, I just kind of had that broadening of vision recently, so it's really refreshing to hear you say something very similar.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you. And it has to be a little bit process oriented. We all get caught up in wanting to win this game, and not just wanting to win this game, but wanting this game to vindicate this particular match of Magic that we're playing, to vindicate the fact that we're a good player, or to vindicate the fact that we brought the right deck to the tournament, or vindicate the fact that we made the right draft pick or whatever. But that is just a small part of our overall experience of Magic. And, you know, taken to a broader perspective, the overall Magic scene in general, you know, it's there's nothing more embarrassing than watching your friend go crazy because he just lost a game. You know, it's just like the most juvenile thing. And yet we all get stuck in it occasionally. So, you know, it's a time to just remember that losing is a big part of this. You know, we're not in a dancing club or yoga or knitting. You know, we're all going to lose sometimes.
And speaking of Magic experiences, obviously we all have a journey that includes ups and downs, highs and lows, but the peaks and the valleys are unique to each of us. And so when you started getting competitive, what was an aspect of Magic that you were terrible at, but that you eventually overcame?
Wow, good question. Well, I had a lot of weaknesses when I started and some strengths. I think one big weakness I had was that what I really wanted to do was break the format. And as such, I wasn't really excited about going along with other people's ideas. So that meant often trying things out other people had already tried, or dismissing things other people were suggesting, which sometimes wasted time and sometimes just altogether had me playing a deck that wasn't nearly as good as decks I had access to. And this will happen to everyone. They'll know about a great deck, and for some reason or other, they just can't quite stomach playing it, and they'll end up missing out. But early on in my career, that happened several times. Notably, I think it was Worlds 2001, I think. There was a mono-blue Tinker deck. Actually, the finals of the tournament was Bob Maher against John Finkel. So obviously it was a great deck, and that was what our team played. And for whatever reason, I just didn't want to be playing somebody else's deck. I wanted to make my own deck. And as a result, I missed out on a great deck.
How do you find the right balance, though? Because sometimes, you know, you see the field, and everybody knows about the stuff that's out there now, and you have to come up with something to kind of attack what's there. So where's that balance between playing what's good and coming up with something to beat it?
Well, I wouldn't say that there's really a tension between playing what's good and being open-minded. Part of being open-minded is just recognizing that other people can have good ideas that aren't you. So whether that's the person who won the Star City, you know, Invitational, or your friend in playtesting, or your cousin who messages you and says, "Hey, I built a great deck," and you know, 9 out of 10 times it's nothing, but, you know, do you give it a try? So I think it's mostly just a matter of having a little humility. I think that's really the biggest thing, and maybe not working so hard to prove oneself, and just trying to be efficient, trying to give other people's opinion a little bit of weight while also trying things out to your own satisfaction.
And as you progressed as a Magic player, you know, from those early beginnings with strengths and weaknesses, like you said, and identifying what those were and moving on, was there a period of time that you really feel like you improved or leveled up and you were able to look back and say, "Hey, like, I can do this," or "I'm a good player," or, you know, "This is something I want to, you know, take on seriously"? Like, was there a big growth period for you that you can remember?
When I started Magic when I was almost 12, I was playing tournaments when I was 13. I went to the Junior Pro Tour when I was 14. And I made the finals of a Pro Tour when I was 15. So that's a pretty short period. So during that time, I improved a ton. And I went from being, I guess one, you know, each year I went up several levels, you know, from being a novice to an intermediate, to being a strong PTQ player, to a strong pro player. So a lot happened there, but honestly, it's so long ago, I can't really remember. Probably my strongest time playing Magic relative to the field was when I was in high school, because I could dedicate, it was just all that I was thinking about. You know, since then I've had a lot of different strengths and weaknesses depending on when. Sometimes I'm playing better, sometimes I'm too stubborn, sometimes I'm not giving enough time. So I wouldn't say that there was like a particular time where I, you know, saw the Matrix and was suddenly what's his name? Neo.
Neo, yeah.
And from there on it's just been riding out into the sunset. You know, I had when I first came back to Magic in 2014, we did well at the first team GP I'd played in a while, but then my next five pro tours I did pretty badly, and it's only just in the last 3 months or so that I've done well in some Grand Prix. I made the finals in Louisville, and then I was a couple of matches out of top eight in where was the last pro tour? Australia in Pro Tour Sydney. So you know, I think there's been a little bit of relearning my trade, getting used to what's going on, getting comfortable. But there's also a lot of variance. And I think it's been basically up and down ever since I was maybe 18.
First of all, I love the analogy of seeing the Matrix. I'm going to use that in the future when I kind of go through that. So that was a great way to put it. So thank you. That's awesome. Second of all, coming back, I love hearing about, you know, your coming back story. Is it like riding a bike? You know, you were out for a little bit and you came back and you got it. Obviously, you know the mechanics of how to play Magic, but was it just getting used to the current cards or the current meta? Or what was it that was kind of rocky for you coming back?
I think the two biggest things, one is a little bit the muscle memory and just having things be that much clearer and easier and automatic, because every small thing that's a little bit more difficult just makes the whole process a little bit slower. Kind of like at a pre-release, you can't expect yourself to play perfectly because you might not even quite know what all your cards do. Similar thing, if you haven't played a pro tour in 4 years, you know, you're going to miss a few things and you're not going to be in a good position to really dedicate yourself to making the perfect play. On the other hand, there's confidence and, like, you know, willingness to really put yourself on the same footing as your opponent, as all your opponents. When I was a kid, a teenager, I was just, I didn't really think that way. I guess I just wanted to prove myself and I was angry and wanted to beat everyone. And, I didn't really care how I felt. And now, I'm a little cooled down by age. And sometimes I feel like, God, I don't want to play this guy. He's better than I am. I want to play somebody who's worse, you know. and it's easy to get a little bit shy in a match or hesitant. And it takes a while to get yourself in a place where you really feel deeply that you belong in the match.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting, and I'm proud of you out there. I really hope that you're taking this in and realizing that it doesn't matter what level of Magic you're at, you can experience those feelings, and there's nothing wrong with that, but the feeling of, oh man, like, I don't want to play this guy, like, he's better than me. Like, obviously, all the way up and down the tiers of play that we have, people have those similar feelings, and so you just gotta, like, Ben, like you were saying, just, it takes a while to find yourself and settle into a match and say, hey, like, I can be here, I can do this, and really, you know, make the most of it. So that's really interesting. I think that's great.
Absolutely.
Has there been players, past or present, that you look up to, that you admire?
Yeah, I've played with a lot of great players. I learned a lot from Dan Clegg when I was a kid, when I was 14, 15. We kind of came up in the pro tour together. Casey McCarroll and Ken Ho, those were local guys. Some of you have heard of them. These are Pro Tour champions from a long time ago. A little later, William Jensen, John Finkel, you know, guys who I felt like I could really, really learn a little bit from. Brian Kibler. I think I've learned a fair amount from Patrick Chapin as well. But I wouldn't say that there was anyone I ever, like, sort of studied at the feet of. But I do try, when I play people, to play people and talk to people about Magic, to ask a little bit of a self-centered question, which is, what can I learn from this guy? and not just like a sentence or two, but just how can this person's playing magic shine a little light on my own playing? And even in a match, you know, when this guy plays a certain two mana card or leaves two mana untapped or something, what is he trying to tell me? Or what is he not trying to tell me? So that it's not just an adversarial situation, but one where you kind of have your thinking cap on and you're porous enough to be ready to learn something.
Now, obviously, some of this I can tell is internal dialogue while you're playing in game, but do you ever make this external dialogue? Do you ever ask them, like maybe after the match, and really try and soak in what you can learn from your opponents and in a situation like that?
Yeah, a lot of pro players really enjoy kind of a post-mortem. And sometimes after a tournament, it can be very interesting when you talk to another team and you say, oh, what decks did you think were good? You know, what did you think? Would you think there was going to be a combo deck in the format? Did you think there'd be a good control deck? And it's just really fun to look back at your own process and contrast it with somebody else who was trying really hard to do the same thing, but likely had very different results. So there's no obvious way to apply it necessarily, because after the Pro Tour, there's a ton of like new knowledge. So it doesn't totally matter what the other teams thought before the Pro Tour. But it is, I think, a very satisfying time to reflect on what you were thinking, what you missed, what you might not miss next time, how other people approach the game.
Love it. And what would you say is your worst Magic moment, and what did you learn from that experience?
What is my worst Magic moment? Well, I wouldn't say I learned anything from it. I had a match. I was playing in Masters, a Masters I did not win, I'm afraid. And Wasteland was a card in the format. And I was very used to, I had Volcanic Islands in my deck, tapping my Volcanic Islands and leaving basic islands untapped, so that if my opponent wanted to Wasteland one of my lands, I'd still have mana up to counter a spell. That was kind of a habit I was in. And usually it was right. But I also had Pyroblast in my deck, and I tapped both of my Volcanic Islands to cast an Accumulated Knowledge, which is just a blue card draw spell. And I drew a Pyroblast off of the Accumulated Knowledge, and I had no red mana left. And of course, my opponent wasn't even playing with Wasteland. It was just a bad habit. And he ended up casting a crucial blue spell, which I couldn't counter with my Pyroblast because I had tapped all my Volcanic Islands. And because of that, he ended up winning. And it was just one of those, you know, we all have a few mistakes we've made in high-stakes matches. And that was just, every match of Masters is crucial. I had a really good deck. But I know that, you know, had I not made that silly mistake, I would have won the match, and I maybe would have won another Masters.
Dang. Yeah, that stinks. So what did you do to cope with that afterwards? Because, you know, like you said, we've all made mistakes in matches that are important to us, whatever that level is for us. What did you do moving past that? Like, or what did you do to move past that?
Well, this is a long time ago. I probably told a few people about it, kind of got it off my chest, and just went on playing. That's about all I could do at the time. You know, now I might do something a little more fancy, like meditate while thinking about it or something like that. Take a few deep breaths, you know, while trying to recognize my feelings on the matter or let it pass or something like that. But really, I didn't do anything. I just kept playing Magic and hoped I wouldn't make the same mistake next time.
Now, on the flip side are our highs and our proud Magic moments. So what has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
What has been my proudest Magic moment to date? You know, I hate to say it, but a little bit like Mike McDermott, Matt Damon's character in Rounders, I have an easier time remembering big mistakes or large disappointments in my career than I can remember big moments of pride. But I was very proud of my team at Grand Prix Louisville a couple weeks ago. It was very cool playing with Matt Baccio and Tillman Bragg making the finals. It's a very satisfying thing to go with friends of yours. And I don't think anyone picked us very high to win. I think we were like the 15th pick or something. And to just keep winning together. You know, we built our decks together. We talked strategy together. We went through frustrating times, exciting times, stressful times, and to win, you know, with somebody else and have your winning help someone else is just a great feeling. To help them both qualify for the Pro Tour is great. And now I'll probably see them at the Pro Tour Dublin or Pro Tour Nashville. And it's wonderful to have been a part of that.
That's awesome. That is really cool. Was it both of their first time to make it to the Pro Tour?
Honestly, I'm not sure. They maybe both played in one or two, or maybe a couple more. But I know they haven't played in the Pro Tour in quite a while.
That's neat. And I love the team aspect that you highlighted, how just the sense of accomplishment that you feel when you're able to do something great with others, with people that you have labored with and struggled with and studied with and moved along with together, and just being able to share that with them is a great feeling. And so I think that's wonderful that that's what you were able to highlight from that. So thanks for sharing.
Yeah, no problem.
So getting ready for that event, what did it take? What did your preparation look like? How often were you guys playing? Tell us, what does effective preparation look like?
Well, I don't know if this counted as effective preparation. We were a team, all living in different places. Matt Baccio lives in New York. Tillman Bragg lives in Curacao, and I was living in San Francisco. So we chatted some just on Facebook. We all drafted the format some. And then I think I was the only one who actually got together with some local pros and built some sealed decks. I talked to other people who were building a lot of sealed decks. And then the day before, we did a bunch of sealed decks and kind of got a little bit of our method together. Some things like not getting, when you're in the team sealed building process, it's important to be very efficient. And, you know, there's a lot of cards to juggle, hundreds of cards. So you know, you want to try one deck, one set of decks, look at them. Each person can tinker a little and then check in, you know, is this how we want our decks to look? And then you switch them around again. And we had played in another team Grand Prix before. And just in our practice, we were really mindful of not wasting our time during the deck build, not getting too hung up on things that didn't matter, and trying to build like the right color archetypes instead of worrying about getting the perfect 40 cards in each deck. And I think that that really helped us to try a lot of different things and kind of eyeball test them all and come up with the right archetypes.
So the day before, like you said, you were building a bunch of sealed pools for team. How does that actually logistically work? You each like have a box of booster packs and you just like plow through them all, or how did you actually do that?
Yeah, you build, you pop booster boxes, you build them together. We had some that we had built separately. So like Tillman built a set of decks with his friend and then handed me the cards, and I built with a set of cards, and then maybe Matt built them as well. Talking about differences, talking about just trying to get familiar with each other's methodology. Okay. And yeah, kind of just a little bit where they're coming from about a format. You know, just finding out that your friend really likes to play aggressive decks is important. You know, you don't want to put him in a situation where he has to play a control deck. And by the same token, you have to recognize where he might think a card is not very good because it's not good in aggressive decks. But, you know, you have to be able to be there and say, hey, listen, you know, Grapple with the Pass is a really good card. Even if it doesn't go in your beatdown deck, that card still has value.
That's really cool. So as you've played, and you have played thousands of games against probably thousands of different players, what is the biggest mistake that you see players make, and then how can we avoid that mistake?
Jeez, tough question. I think the biggest type of mistake I see is people getting, as we talked about before, people getting really attached to the outcome of a particular game and not having enough of a long view. So they might have, say they have a cathartic reunion, which is discard two cards, draw three. And let's say they really needed to find green mana in their cathartic reunion. And they have a lot of green mana in their deck, and they expect to get it. And they discard two cards and draw three. And then on their next turn, they draw another card. And they would have gotten green mana, you know, 80 or 90%, but this is the one of the times when they don't get it. All of a sudden, it's like they find themselves very angry. And they, instead of being a little bit disappointed, they get into this like thing where they're not sure whether they hate magic or hate their opponent or hate themselves. And they get very derailed. And this is just not good for anybody. It's really just an unpleasant thing that's not going to help your magic game. So, you know, the next time you get really disappointed about not getting a green mana, get back to the fact that this is just an eventuality for all of us. And you got to learn to at least cope with these situations. It's going to come up again and again and again, you know? And if you're a 14-year-old kid, okay. But, you know, most of us are grown men and women. And, you know, we have to learn to sit in traffic and we have to learn to not draw green mana. It's just part of the deal.
I love it. Yeah, that's so
true.
And
it'll help you win, too.
So how do we develop that longer perspective to help even us out in those high moments?
What I would say is to try not to dwell on the anger you feel, and to try not to dwell on how seemingly unfair it is that you couldn't draw green mana, and to remember that everyone else also doesn't draw green mana some of the time, and it's just part of the game. It's not a reflection on you as a person or the universe being against you. It's just part of the game. And if you wanted to play a game that had no luck in it, there are games like that out there. You know, you can go play chess or Go or whatever.
Right.
See how you do.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You probably don't want to be playing those games, and that's why you're playing Magic.
I love it how it was explained one time that just like you have some bad beat story that probably nobody wants to hear, somebody else has a bad beat story about you. You know, like we all have these similar experiences, and like you said, the universe is not aligning against you. You know, like it just happens, and just like you get mana screwed, guess what? Sometimes your opponent gets mana screwed, and then you win that game, and they go off to their friends and say, "Oh," and they have a bad beat story. You know, so just like you said, just have, you know, develop a longer perspective by not dwelling on that and understanding that it happens to everybody.
Indeed, indeed, well put.
So turning that focus, turning that lens inward on you, we talked about mistakes that you see other people make. What about you? What are you working on as a Magic player? What are some of your shortcomings that you see in yourself right now?
One thing is I'm trying to get used to the new method of preparation. So it used to be that a Pro Tour was one format and it was a fresh format. So if it was extended, which is sort of like what Modern is now, or let's just call it Modern. If it was Modern, it would be a format that pros had not played in quite a long time, maybe as much as a year. So there would be a lot of space to try new things, and the most current set would be out for a month or two before the Pro Tour. So you'd have a lot of time, a lot of ground to cover, and it was just a slower process, and you could expect to have your deck ready weeks before the tournament. Nowadays, it's just that's not the case at all. The spoiler is maybe complete 3 or 4 weeks before the tournament, and the pre-release is 2 weeks before the tournament. And you're not just playing one format, you're playing draft as well. So you're learning two formats in half the time, twice as many formats half the time. So it's important to, at least I'm learning, to not get hunkered down just trying one deck, but to try a lot of different things, keep a broad perspective. And even in the games themselves, when I'm first playing a format, I try to be really careful not to get hung up on making the perfect play. I want to make sure that I do have the important things in mind, like what the cards do and maybe just the basics of my opponent's deck. But I think it's really a bad idea, and I know that I do it, to get caught up in trying to make the 10 out of 10 play. It's just not worth the time or the effort early on in testing. And then as it gets closer and closer to the tournament, you can start to be a little more dedicated to one deck, leaning toward one deck or leaning toward one draft strategy, or getting a little more committed to your ideas. And maybe then trying to really make the perfect, perfect play. But that's just in the days, before the Pro Tour. Before that, you really have to tread more lightly and try to get a broad view on the format and recognize there are going to be things you're going to miss. But by the same token, you do have some time to try things out, and you need to take advantage of that and not just work on one deck.
That's so interesting. Like you said, twice the formats in half the time, and just what that does to preparation, and it's just fascinating to hear that, what goes into preparing for a pro tour, these days. And I mean,
it's changed a lot, man. It's changed a lot.
That's so cool. Yep. From our perspective, we love watching the pros, figure out all the new stuff. And I wonder if that was part of the decision, to have it be more new for everybody, including the pros, so that to kind of, I guess, highlight the pros and their abilities and what they come up with and stuff. And very poignant right now, because we're in one of those stages right now where we're waiting for, Pro Tour Kaladesh to roll around and see what the pros do with all these new vehicles and stuff like that. And so, but obviously for many of us who haven't been following the Pro Tour as long as you have, not understanding that the changes that have been made. So that's really, really interesting. So love it. And to kind of widen the view a little bit over your career of Magic, what is the deepest thing you've learned about yourself from playing Magic?
One thing I've learned is that I do have a certain affinity for competition, and that I really am willing to pit myself against other people. That I obviously have some appetite for confrontation, which wouldn't be obvious. I mean, we all have in our own lives, there are things we're afraid of or we try to compromise about. But Magic definitely shows that I am a person who is really ready to compete and willing to invest a lot of time in setting myself up to win, which might not be totally obvious from my life during certain times, but it is something, something sort of a loud signal that I can see about myself for Magic when I reflect back.
Sweet. That's really neat that you've been able to, just gain that perspective and understand that about, yourself. So that's really cool. What would you say is your best format or your favorite format?
Well, recently team stuff has been really good. I think I've been in the running for top eight in the last four team tournaments I've played in. Other than that, I really like tuning constructed decks. I think I'm very good at tuning, seeing what makes, not just what decks are good, but what makes a deck good. Which are the six cards that really don't belong in the deck? How should we change things at your sideboard in this matchup or that matchup? But I wouldn't say that I have a particular format I'm best at. And realistically, Pro Magic is basically just standard and booster draft right now. So it's not... Doesn't really reward the person who thinks they have one really good format they can show up for.
On the topic of tuning the deck, because we hear, at least, I hear that you're really good at, tuning decks and whatnot. And I think that you have some Magic superpower where you just look at the deck and like the six cards just start glowing and you're like, oh, well, those six obviously don't go. And then that's obviously not the case. So how do you go through that process? Like, how do you identify which cards are the dead weights? Obviously not the actual card dead weight, because it'd be obvious it says dead weight in the top left. But how do you identify the fat in a deck and cut that out for what is really useful now, today, for the tournament coming up this weekend? Do you go through some kind of process, or what does that look like?
Tuning is a very interesting process and something that can look very opaque from an outside view. I'll tell you, when I was like 14, 15, 16, if I was interested in playing a deck, what I would do is literally shuffle it up and just start goldfishing, just start drawing hands, playing turn after turn. And somehow it just intuitively just clicked which cards I wasn't happy to see, which things I was missing, what stage of the game I was vulnerable in, what types of effects that are usually not that good might fit my deck. And it's just a gear that just starts turning. And some people have more of it and some people have less of it. And it is, there are two temptations I find. One temptation is to make it a totally explicit analytic process where you try to somehow scientifically, apples to apples, compare everything and have like a really sound rationale for all of your tuning choices, why this card is better than that card, blah, blah, blah. There's a place for that. Especially if you're comparing your ideas to somebody else's. But it's important also not to get hung up on that. If every time you draw a card, you're unhappy, that's a really good sign it shouldn't be in your deck. Even if someone can make some compelling argument why that's not true, you got to trust your intuition a little bit. That intuition is what makes us good at magic. It's not our ability to construct really compelling arguments. That's not what makes a great magic player. We're not politicians. So it is largely an intuitive process. But on the other hand, you know, you do have to listen to other people. And sometimes just talking to somebody who disagrees with you, even if you get a little bit cantankerous with them, it can open your eyes. You can start to maybe look at a card differently. Maybe you were even playing a card the wrong way. So that maybe sheds a little bit of light on the whole tuning thing. But it is an intuitive process, and as such, it's hard to learn.
Very
Some people are better at it than others. Yeah, Some people are just great at playing magic. You know?
Yeah.
Hey, you know, there it is.
So based on some of the things that you said, some of the interests that you mentioned outside of magic at the beginning, I'm interested to dive into this as we pull into the home stretch here. Do you have any daily rituals or habits or things that you do outside of magic that you feel help lead to your success or, you know, set you up as a person just kind of outside?
You know, I try to live a good life, but I wouldn't say that's necessarily a big part of winning at magic. I think that if you want to win at magic, you have to play a lot of magic. That's the biggest thing. You know, play magic, get in the habit of doing it while you're in a state of mind to do it. You know, don't play it while you're really, really tired, or maybe while you've been smoking marijuana or something like that. You know, do it with a little bit of seriousness. Doesn't have to be, you know, always a job, but it's worth, you know, worth taking seriously. You know, try to play it in a table and chair, and try to be in a mindset of approaching it for the interesting game that it is. Even if it's just a cube draft, you know, with your buddy's pauper set, whatever. You know, try to appreciate the opportunity that magic gives you to be creative and really craft a way forward and not just roll dice, you know, but actually have an interesting game to play.
And do you have any resources that you go to that you can recommend to us? Is there anywhere online that you turn to when you're, you know, trying to learn or research or grow as a player?
I don't know. I'm a bad person to ask about that. A little bit like asking an Italian chef who good cooks are. You know, there's an ego element when I read somebody's article. You know, parts of me say, no, you didn't get that quite right. So I definitely have a lot of resistance to that. I don't personally find magic articles online all that helpful. But that's not to say that none of them are. I really think reviewing deck lists is a good idea. I think that's super helpful. Just to see, you know, for a large group of people, the people who really wanted to win and made top eight did well, you know, what cards did they think would give them the best chance? You know, you have to take that seriously. If a bunch of people are playing a card you don't like, it's probably time to give it a shot. You know, try it again, try a new combination. That for me is really valuable.
And we love seeing and cheering on our past guests go and do great things. Where can we see you in the future? What events do you have coming up?
Of course, there's a Pro Tour Kaladesh, as you mentioned. And then hopefully I'll get to play in the Grand Prix Amsterdam. It's a little bit of a hike, but I really like Amsterdam and I really like Team Sealed. So I hope that I end up there. And then you can expect me to go to all the Pro Tours in the coming year. There's a Pro Tour in Ireland, which I'm excited about. I have family in Scotland.
Nice.
There's a Pro Tour in Nashville, which I'm also excited about. I happen to have family in Tennessee. Yeah, follow my work. I hope it's good work, but I'll be there one way or the other.
Excellent. Absolutely love it. Once again, all you prodigies out there, Ben Rubin, he is not on Twitter, but if you have the pleasure of bumping into him, then say hello, ask him about magic. He obviously knows a lot, and we have learned a ton today. So, Ben, what is one last parting piece of guidance, either something you've already said you want to emphasize or something new that you want to leave with us here at the end?
Well, thank you for your questions and your patience and for doing this thing to try to spread people's enjoyment of magic and give some new perspectives. Thanks for doing what you're doing.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. Ben, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. Thank you for your time and for sharing your experiences with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it has been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
I hope so. Thank you.
And there you have it. You just listened to episode 139 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. Ben, thank you so much again for being a guest on the show. As always, Prodigies, you can find the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/Ben Rubin. Tap into his mind, get a synopsis of what we talked about today, as well as links to any resources that were mentioned. Speaking of resources, I do want to say that you can go to mtgprotutor.com/free resource and download my 5-point deck building guide that are recommendations from pro players who have been guests right here on this very show. So check that out if you haven't already. And if you have, give me your feedback. What do you think of those resources? Have you used any of them? Feel free to join the discussion. Speaking of discussion, I am super pumped for this weekend, which is Pro Tour Kaladesh, and I cannot wait to discuss what's going on, what the pros do, what decks and archetypes come out, and a lot of that discussion will be happening on the MTG Pro Tutor Facebook group and also on Twitter. So plug into both of those. You can follow me at Sean Penrod on Twitter, and you can find the Facebook group at mtgprotutor.com/Facebook group. I try and make everything mtgprotutor.com/something just so that it's a lot easier to remember. I know that the first part has a lot of syllables in there, but at least the base URL is, you know, the same. And hopefully we get to the point where you can kind of guess where to go just based on the topic. So mtgprotutor.com/free resource for the 5-point deck building guide, and mtgprotutor.com/Facebook group to join our Facebook group. Thank you again for joining me today. Absolutely loved having you here. Absolutely loved talking to Ben. I'm definitely looking forward to the episodes we have coming up. I've had some amazing interviews with some great players, so make sure you stick around. You are not going to want to miss the upcoming episodes. Thanks again. I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.